British Public Radio. Comedy.
Listener discretion is advised.
Will Sophie Ellis Bexter murder Bruce on the dance floor?
Answer me this, answer me this.
A Phileas Fogg snobby crisps igniting a class war.
Answer me this, Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
Hey listeners, I don't know what you're doing while you listen to this episode of Answer Me This, but I'm slightly disturbed by this email that Susie has sent in about a circumstance in which she and her boyfriend found themselves listening to Answer Me This.
Oh, good, because if we like emails about people's relationships, we like them best of all when they're disturbing.
Susie says, "My boyfriend and I spent a lovely evening together in Manchester and got rather carried away with a number of experimental cocktails."
Ooh.
Dry ice, conical flask, flaming, etc.
Oh, the flaming, etc. It's not as good as the ampersand and tonic, but it is good.
Oh, that is refreshing.
Well, that'd just be ampersand tonic.
Yeah.
When we got home, although we were both tired and a little drunk, we were feeling quite amorous, so the lights were off, and one thing led to another. The odd thing was, I could hear this faint mumbling noise around me at the time. I thought we must have left the TV on. It was really bugging me. To my surprise, with no hesitation or trying to hide the evidence, my boyfriend quite happily told me that he was listening to Answer Me This on his iPod at the same time.
No.
What?
It doesn't seem to have aroused her that much, though. She sounds indignant now, as yeah. Well she might be.
Well, indeed.
Did you not notice that he had headphones on?
Maybe they're the little in the ear droppies.
Or maybe the in-the-pillow speakers that some people have.
Yeah, but then you'd both be listening to it as a couple, and of course that would be incredibly sexy, wouldn't it?
What could be more sexy?
Just both of you with your head in the pillow, listening to our voices.
Maybe we should make a special sexy album for lovers.
Can you imagine that? And can you imagine that would just be weird? We couldn't do that.
I think the birth rate would drop.
I think you have to accept my explanation, or you have to accept he simply doesn't love you. It's one or the other.
It might not be about love. He might just think you're not interesting enough in bed. We're speculating.
Mm.
I can't think of anything less sexy than Ollie talking about his cat.
Well, here's another tale of podcast listening on the phone line.
Hi, this is Jayesh from India, and I have a weird first world problem living in one of the poorest parts of the third world. See, the thing is, because of complicated reasons, I have a chauffeur, because that comes out cheaper than having another car and all those sorts of things. But for whatever reasons, I have a chauffeur. And I listen to podcasts and an occasional audiobook on my way to work, but he doesn't speak English. And in any case, I don't think he's interested in the kind of things that I listen to. So Helen and Ollie, answer me this. Is it rude for me to play things that I know he's not interested in? Or is it part of the bargain that he drives wherever I ask him to drive and he listens to whatever I care to listen to? I don't like that, but is that fair?
This really sounds like the emerging Indian middle classes getting hung up on something that would not have occurred to the old guard. You know, if you're used to the idea that you just pay people and they do what your bidding is, you're absolutely fine with this idea of servitude. But if you're kind of a bit anxious about the fact you've got a chauffeur...
I think I'd feel this level of awkwardness and discomfort even if I just had someone who came in to clean. I'd probably find myself massively overpaying them and being over solicitous because I just felt really awkward that I delegated a menial task to somebody else. But as it is, my flat's unclean.
Actually, I had this specific thing of listening to our podcast when I had a build around the other day. Mm. Genuinely, my work for that morning was listening to the edit of the podcast so that I could send you some edit notes.
Mm.
And normally I'd do that on loudspeaker, but I just couldn't face the embarrassment of the conversation of like, oh, what's this you're listening to? Especially if you thought it was rubbish.
Yeah.
I put it on my iPhone and I sat in the garden and listened to it on earphones.
Yeah.
He came up to me and he said, "Have you not got any work today then?" And then I said, "Oh, actually,
I am working."
That's what I said.
Yeah, I'm testing this chair for comfort.
I know that made me look really twatty, but I it was true. So I said, "Well, actually, I'm working. I'm listening to a podcast." And as I said it, I realised that I'm talking to someone who really has absolutely no understanding of, like, that you could possibly do work by sitting in a chair. And he just looked at me like, "I can't believe people like you exist."
Yeah, but to be fair, like, I think a manual worker can figure out that other people work in offices, but most people work in offices, Ollie, not on your recliner.
I know, yeah.
Yeah,
you're lucky,
like
me.
Yeah, I'm at work driving my bus, choo-choo. Then he would have left you alone.
But anyway, who would have guessed that an Indian chauffeur who didn't speak any English maybe might not like this podcast? It's a big shock to me.
Shrug.
But I think, of course, it's fine for you to suggest what the soundtrack should be.
He's on payroll, right?
Exactly.
I find it too awkward to ask taxi drivers to turn down or off truly horrible radio stations, or stick with ones that they've just turned off that I was enjoying.
Chauffeur on your payroll. See, I kind of feel like this about massages, because when I go for a massage, the one thing I really can't stand is the panpipes. The panpipes. It's just it's not relaxing. It's tedious, and it makes me want to wee. But
that's your trigger. I suppose it is things whizzing through a pipe like urine. And when the best track on the CD is the panpipes cover of the theme from Titanic, then that CD really needs to be snapped in half.
Yeah, and I always want to say to the masseur, can you please turn that off?
Pipe literally down.
And I've sometimes been bold enough to say, do you mind turning that down? But what I've never said is what I really want to say, which is, and by the way, can we listen to Radio 4? That's what I really want to say.
Yeah.
And actually, probably the massage artist would probably enjoy that as much as I would. But I don't feel confident enough in saying that. However, if it was in my house and I was paying a masseur or a masseuse to come to my house and administer that service on a weekly basis, my house, my rules. Your chauffeur, your podcast.
Also, I think it's less bad making your chauffeur listen to English podcast that he doesn't understand than it would be to make him listen to music that he really hated, because at least he can just tune out the babbling of the podcasters, whereas the bad music is bad music in any language.
Although there's nothing wrong with sitting in the back with some headphones on either.
No, exactly. If you're so worried about what you think, just put on headphones.
Hi, it's Fred from Kent. I'm just playing table tennis with some of my friends. One side of the bat's red and black, so Helen Ollie, answer me this. Why do table tennis bats have different coloured sides?
It is, of course, in tribute to Red or Black, the greatest TV entertainment format of all time.
Whatever happened to Red or Black?
I think ITV realised they'd spent about 7 times too much money on something that no one liked.
Even though it had Anton Deck in it, and everyone likes Anton Deck.
Everyone does like Anton Deck. Anton Deck, that would be a great show, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You put Anton Deck in one of those old-fashioned weather clocks, and you have to bet on which one's going to come out when it rains.
No, that, of course, is not the reason.
No. Is this the case across all table tennis bats?
Well, it's certainly the case across all professional tennis table bats since the rules were changed in the professional game. So
I remember the day well.
I think it was in the 1980s at some point.
Right, red and black was a very popular colour combination in the 80s. See all the duvet covers from Argos back then.
So ever since then, in the professional game, it's been one side red, one side black. No doubt, in scouts clubs up and down the country, there are still ping pong rackets that are older than that are green.
Well, all the rubber's fallen off anyway.
Exactly. But in the professional ones, yes, they're red and black. And the reason for that...
They love the Stendhal book, Le Rouge et Noir.
It's actually... Because all table tennis rackets have always had, because they're two-sided, the ability to have two different thicknesses of rubber.
Oh.
So one side gives you a slow spin, one gives you a fast spin.
Oh.
And of course, as a relatively amateur player, as I imagine you are, as I am.
Oh, I'm not a player.
Yeah, you've probably never noticed that. But to professional table tennis players, this is obvious. And what's important is actually, I thought maybe they designated one side should be red, one side should be black, so that the player can clearly see which thickness of rubber they're going to use when they, you know, make a move.
Or that the other player can see which thickness of rubber has been used to hit the ball at them.
Well, that's it.
Oh,
actually, the reason is it's so that you can see what your opponent's doing. So before the match, you're entitled to go and have a look at your opponent's bat, work out which is which, because it doesn't have to be that black is always the thin one or whatever, but one is one is the other. Work out which red is, which black is, and then you can see as they're about to hit the ball whether they're using a slow spin or a fast spin, so that you can then volley in response accordingly. So that's the reason.
Gosh, I wasn't expecting to learn anything today. Now you've ruined that ambition.
Especially about ping pong.
If you've got a question, then email your question. Yeah, to answer me, this podcast, googlemail.com. Answer me, this podcast, googlemail.com. Answer me, this podcast, googlemail.com. Hepcat. Answer me this podcast, googlemail.com.
Time for a question from a lady who has chosen to remain anonymous. Yes.
Who says, I work in a large office.
Ooh.
Yes.
It's really big, isn't
utility.
It? Utility. Oh, it's enormous, my office.
And whilst I get on with most of the people I work with, I do have an office nemesis.
Yes.
Yeah. I had one of those ones. Have you ever had one? You've hardly worked long enough in offices to have one, really.
You're my office nemesis.
So true. It's funny because it's true.
Yes. Yes, I have. Yeah.
What was it? A he? Was it a she?
It was a she.
What was the problem?
She played Jamie Cullum all day.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I had one once who just... He was fine. Like, I would have liked him. He had a problem with me because I was also a man with a sense of humour. Literally that. Like, mm-hmm. I kept, like, everyone else in the office was a bit older or a woman or had a defining characteristic which wasn't that they were a bit fun.
Yeah.
And I came in and he thought that I was kind of Crazy Colin from The Fast Show, basically.
Right.
And I wasn't. I just sometimes told jokes because that was his thing.
Oh.
I'd, like, trodden on his toes. I was a bit happy. That he just hated me, made it really obvious that I was his nemesis.
Some people hate other people's happiness, but that's because they're very unhappy people themselves.
Well, let's hope that this anonymous lady is not that person.
No.
And that, in fact, she is full of joy in this question. Fairly recently, she said, my office nemesis came up to my floor and presented a large plate full of homemade cupcakes.
What a bitch!
What a absolute cow. She made a big song and dance about them.
Oh, God.
And proceeded to talk to my boss for 10 minutes about how awful it must be having an assistant who doesn't ever bake. Me.
Maybe that was her joking.
Yeah.
Maybe she's like, well, anonymous girl, she's much too busy being a clever executive to be able to mess around making cupcakes, isn't she? Unlike me. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate.
Here, she said, have these cupcakes stuffed with strawberries. I couldn't let you miss out on them. I was up all weekend baking 3 batches. I split vanilla pods and made a strawberry filling and blah, 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 blah.
I want to make you fat with cake.
Anyway, to her credit, says anonymous lady, the cupcakes were absolutely delicious.
God damn it.
And I emailed her telling her so.
That was very magnanimous of you,
it was,
anonymous lady.
Yeah.
Mm. You're trying to overcome your natural distaste for this woman.
We proceeded, continues anonymous lady, to have a long email conversation about how awesome she is because she bakes.
Look, baking is not that hard. She's not that awesome.
And how inferior I am because I don't bake.
Baking's not that hard. You could bake if you wanted to, but you don't, and that's fine.
This woman's self-esteem hinges on a very small amount of flair and sugar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It is funny, though, the baking snobbery that there is, because baking is bad for you, not the baking, but the eating of cakes. And it's also something you can buy quite cheaply. So if you're a busy power office woman, it's fine not to bake, I think. I wouldn't judge a woman who doesn't bake.
No, nor would I.
And yet, clearly, this is an established trend, isn't it? Have you ever, do you think, made people feel inferior because you do bake?
I hope not. I'm always very embarrassed when people praise my baking, like when I make bread, because I know how easy it is and they don't. So I don't want them to feel inferior because they could easily do it. They just don't realise that.
Mm. Couldn't do this job, though, the podcast.
No, I'm unique, and I'm the best. I'm the bestie.
In the world.
This is the hardest job in the world, mate.
The story continues. Fast forward to last weekend, and whilst doing the weekly shop, guess what I saw in the cupcake aisle?
Was it strawberry cupcakes with a vanilla
Don't actually guess, Martin. Oh, right. Keep it rhetorical. I've got an email to read
out. It's exactly the cupcakes that she tasted from this woman that claimed she cooked them, right?
Well, perhaps. Let's see.
Is it a dragon?
Oh, yes. You guessed it. She guessed that you'd guess it, Martin.
I did guess it.
Yeah. Her homemade cupcakes.
She knows me so well.
Yeah.
Before you question my judgment, she says, let me inform you that there is not a shadow of a doubt that these were the very cupcakes my office nemesis had claimed to make.
Unbelievable. This is like in a film where someone you think is dead isn't. Who's in the coffin then?
The double swirl vanilla strawberry icing and stuffed strawberry centre was a dead giveaway.
Unless office nemesis had got the idea from the shop bought ones and she thought, I can easily replicate that.
No, she says, be in no doubt, Helen.
Okay,
we have to take her at word.
I'm taking you at your word.
She's answered me this questionnaire. There's always, side with her.
There's always doubt.
I trust you. I trust you as much as I can trust anyone, anonymous Sadie.
So, she continues, being the bitch that I am, the surprisingly self-aware bitch that I am,
and pleasant-seeming,
I thought I would have some fun with her, and come Monday morning, I emailed her, saying I couldn't stop thinking about those cupcakes all weekend, and that I'd love the recipe. I fully expected her to fess up at this point and admit that she hadn't really baked them.
No, she's been caught in a lie.
But after 45 minutes, she called me and proceeded to tell me that the recipe is many years old.
Oh, yeah, because cupcakes were very popular in 1700.
And actually written in German, and that she had her mum round over the weekend to help translate the recipe.
Yep. Oh, that's really kind.
That is actually a brilliant excuse, though, isn't it? She's used a lot of imagination there.
Yeah, but anonymous lady just needs to go, oh, that's all right, I'm fluent in German. Yeah. Send it over. I know, yeah. Not a problem.
She talked for 20 minutes about sectioned icing bags and how the recipe would be much too hard to replicate for someone like me.
She sounds really passive-aggressive, doesn't she?
This woman sounds insane, I love it.
Anyway, I had a good old laugh about this to my boyfriend, and every time she does something remotely annoying, I bask in the knowledge that I know this nugget of information about her, and that even though I don't bake, I would never dream of buying a cake and pretending I had baked it.
Aww. I think it's nice that she's finding internal satisfaction in this.
Yeah.
Anyway, this brings me in a fairly long-winded manner.
I've enjoyed the journey.
I have too. To my question. Yesterday at work, my nemesis was extremely rude to me and called me a number of inappropriate names and generally crossed the line in terms of office etiquette.
What is wrong with this woman? She sounds like a real mess, doesn't she, psychologically?
She does. Now, I am sorely tempted to reveal her secret, but I know that this would make me just as much of a bitch as her, and in situations like this, it is often best to retain a dignified silence.
Yeah, because the big reveal won't actually matter to anybody else. You'd be like, oh, but everybody gather around, guess what? Nemesis, you know those cupcakes she brought in? She did not bake them. She didn't even plagiarise them. She bought them. And they'd be like, oh, right, where can I get them? I really enjoyed those.
Yeah.
Oh, supermarket, great. Then back to work.
Yeah. So, she says, Helen, answer me this. What would you do in this situation? Is it worth revealing her secret and igniting a full-scale office war
that only you are involved in?
Which, as we say, would not happen. Mm. Or should I just keep quiet and carry on? I really can't decide. Please help.
I think you should keep toying with her. Having this knowledge, you should just nudge her more and more to extreme lies to cover up the fact that she bought these cakes.
Yeah.
So I think you could say that you knew German so you could have the recipe. You could say that you saw her cupcakes in the shop and they must have ripped off her design, and does she want you to help her write a letter full of legalese telling them to knock off the plagiarism?
Well, actually, if you were going to out her cupcakes, the meanest way to do it would actually not to be to make a big statement at all, but to turn up with a tray of the cupcakes and offer them around the office.
Either you turn up and say, oh, I just got these from the supermarket.
Yeah.
Or you say, oh, I baked these.
Yeah.
Because then she can't call you out.
Yeah. No, you offer her one and say, I baked these.
Yeah.
That would be the
full-on... This
took
me all weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be how Iago would do it.
Yeah. They taste just like yours. Yeah. I think that's brilliantly clever.
Yeah, and also because she might actually almost convince herself that that's true to play along with the lie. Like, she doesn't know where the truth begins there.
No,
does she?
Well, she has started banging on about divided piping bags and so on. Yeah. So there's just more satisfaction for you to pull the rug from under her gradually every day.
Yes, much more satisfying revenge than looking to the rest of the office like the woman who really cares about the cakes.
The unfunny answer is that she needs to put in a complaint about this woman she's actually been abusing her. The cupcake thing, that's a nice...
That's an aside.
That's a fun revenge, but at the same time, grievance procedure. Yeah. Your company probably has one.
Yeah, if you approach HR, just try and focus on this woman's unprofessional behaviour.
If you start talking about the cakes, they're going to think you're nuts.
Yes.
They're going to edge away towards the door.
You buy for $7.99 on iTunes, that seems worth it.
Kesha's new LP.
Churchill's biography.
Or an app that does jack shit.
For the same sum,
you can get all the fun of 5 hours of our old stuff.
We're selling the first 3 years of Answer Me This in iTunes.
Most of it is good, just a little bit is guff.
Go to answermethispodcast.com/classic and click the link.
And with your money, we'll swaddle ourselves in nothing but the fun.
Finest mink and gold shoes and diamond hats but normal pants.
Here's a question from Josh from New York, who says, I was recently discussing archaic institutional traditions with a British friend, and he mentioned that the British Parliament cannot go into session without the presence of some particular mace, as in not the husk of a nutmeg or the spray that wards off attackers, but the ornamental
thing. Maggie Thatcher
thing.
May have had some of that in her handbag.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She farted it. The mace is an ornamental...
An ornamental mace, yes. A weapon, an ornamental weapon.
Is it the one that's a ball on a stick or something like that?
Yes, right, it's a big club with a ball on the end.
It's like an ornate cudgel, essentially.
Yes.
Okay, right. Well, Josh says, Ollie, answer me this. Is this a real thing, or is my friend pulling some sort of prank on my American ignorance? Don't want to be an American ignorance.
Someone threw it on the floor, didn't they?
They did. Well, numerous people have, in fact.
Oh, that suggests it's real, then.
Well, okay, yes. Things first. Yes, it is real. The House of Commons actually cannot proceed I mean, of course, it actually could. I'm sure they'd survive if it got stolen.
But they love any excuse just to piss around.
They do, don't they? Oh, 6 week holiday. We'll take that. Yeah, the House of Commons technically can't proceed, can't sit and debate unless every day the mace is carried in and out of the Commons and Lord Chambers by the Sergeant at Arms.
Oh, for goodness' sake!
Is it like a sort of symbol of their authority over the crown, relative to the crown?
Yes, it's to do with royalty. Yes, so it originated when government was the king, when the king was governing, he made damn sure there was someone near him with a big weapon to cudgel anyone to death who tried to kill him.
Right. I bet now if you tried to hit anyone with the mace, they would be furious because it's an antique.
Yeah, exactly. In the olden days, and I can't remember which monarch it was, but it was hundreds of years ago.
One of the olden monarchies.
That's exactly what it was. The mace wasn't ornamental. I mean, it might have looked pretty because it was a royal one, but it belonged to the head of the king's military who was there to kill anyone who would try and kill the king.
And let's face it, if you do ornament a mace with jewels, that's going to make it all the more painful for the person getting whacked with it.
Yes, although I think it got more ornamental over time because weapons developed in alternative ways, but they liked the we're a traditional country. We like the traditions.
Yeah, we like to bedazzle our machine guns now, don't we?
It just wouldn't be the same if it was like, and the placing of the golden Uzi.
Exactly.
Begins the secession of Parliament.
Exactly, and then when it got to the point, of course, where the Queen is figuratively the head of the government but actually isn't there apart from during the Queen's speech.
She's a real slucker.
It is purely ornamental, and it's there just to represent the fact that they're there for the Queen.
But they still carry it in every day.
By the Sergeant-at-Arms, who presumably is an ex-military person, yes. It's quite seriously taken.
At the beginning of each day,
in the Lords and the Commons, and it's placed under the table so that they can debate.
What if you need it in the Commons and the Lords at the same time?
No, there's two different ones.
There's two maces.
I think the Lords has two maces, and the Commons has one. But Martin correctly remembered that, in fact, some politicians have been done for lifting it aggressively. Three, in fact. In 1976, Michael Heseltine had a go.
Oh, really? Naughty Heseltine.
He apparently, during a heated debate on the Aircraft and Shipbuilding Industries Bill, which we all remember being very tense, he grabbed the mace and shook it at the opposing Labour Party members.
He was just trying to show what a plane in flight looks like.
But not just Tories that have done this, Helen. In 1987, Ron Brown, the Labour MP for Leith, picked up the mace during a debate on the poll tax and threw it to the floor.
No! Yeah. Break the mace.
Yeah. Fight the power.
Well, actually, if you do break the mace, you're basically suspended.
Wow.
Which is actually what happened in the most recent one, which was also a Labour MP, John McDonnell, in 2009.
Tear away.
This was about the expansion of Heathrow. Wasn't even worth having a throw about that, because it's still going on, that debate.
Why is aviation such a mace-destructive topic?
Apparently, after the vote, in which the Transport Secretary, Jeff Hoon, at the time announced that the government had decided to approve a new Heathrow runway, McDonnell picked up the Commons mace
and shoved it up Jeff Hoon.
Well, actually, we'll never know where he shoved it, because at that point the cameras cut out. So serious a breach is this considered.
Jeff Hoon has not been able to pass solids ever since.
Is that why it works so funny?
Do you think there is an equivalent odd practice in American government, like each day they let loose a bald eagle around the chamber?
Actually, there is a directly equivalent tradition, because guess what? They have a mace too.
No way!
So this isn't just a stupid...
Wait, was that from monarchist times?
Well, it's from the fact that British people wrote the American Constitution, isn't it?
Oh, but is it shaped like Mickey Mouse or something?
No.
That's their royalty.
It is a standard mace size, but instead of being
what
under
is
the...
that, though?
Well, you know, sort of weapon size.
Mace-ish.
You know, let's yeah, say...
Like tiny little
four
pistol
foot
or
and
cannon.
Silver.
It's about half the size of a pike, but double the size of a short sword.
Stop it.
But what's different about this is it stands in a cylindrical pedestal made of green marble.
Oh, right, so like an umbrella stand for a mace.
Just for the mace, yeah.
It's odd, isn't it? Because I'd imagine otherwise it's very difficult to get a weapon in to American Parliament.
Into the House of Representatives, you bet.
Oh, but it's fine if it's an ornament with a marble stand.
Yeah, and I don't think they bring it in every day. I could be wrong about that, but it sits to the right of the Speaker. So if you ever see footage of the United States House of Representatives, look to the right of the Speaker, and there's a green marble mace stand. Fact.
That's probably a sink plunger or something, isn't it? Or a toilet brush.
It was Paris in the spring of 1898. Two children paddled gaily in the Seine. One giggled like a girl, the other was a girl, and their names were Olivier and Helene.
Here's a question from Sam from Enniskillen, who says, I just heard on the radio the song Elvis Ain't Dead.
Who's that by?
Don't know.
Never heard it. Oh, hold on. No, I know who it is. I just remembered, and it's awful.
Oh, no.
It's, who are those three clowns called who do such... She's so lovely.
Oh,
she's so lovely.
The other thing. Oh,
what are they called?
Soup.
Yeah, no, something like that, yeah.
Fatuous Twants.
Yeah. What are they called?
Oh.
Schoolboy errors.
I could obviously look it up, but Oh, what are they called?
Scouting for Girls.
Scouting for Girls.
Oh, my goodness.
They did the song Elvis Ain't Dead.
I'm glad that we didn't have to Google that, because I don't want Google to think we're interesting. Thanks to Scouting for Girls, Sam and Ellis Ginnan is thinking the following. He says, Ollie, answer me this. What started the conspiracy theory that Elvis Presley didn't really die? And was there any evidence to suggest that he didn't really die?
Well, of course, with conspiracy theories, there's always evidence, in inverted commas, if you know where to look for it. But that doesn't mean that it's actually evidence, does
He's
it?
He's still living in the toilet.
I thought the rumour was that when he went into the army, he died then, or he never came back from the army. When was that? Like,
so it was an actor playing him for 20 years in Vegas and in the comeback special.
Doing a really great job.
It was his brother. That's the thing.
What?
Wow, that's properly mental. The conspiracy theory that Elvis didn't die didn't really start until 1979, when Geraldo Rivera did a show about it.
Yeah, because I'm assuming that in 1977 there were quite a lot of people that had seen dead Elvis.
Well, yes, his open casket was on display and Indeed. You could go and see it.
Yeah.
Although that sowed the seeds for what later would become the conspiracy. So what happened is you could go and see it. Obviously, it's a pre-Twitter age by some decades. So people weren't sending the photo around their friends. They weren't allowed to take pictures of the corpse. But someone who was a confidant of Elvis, which is a bit horrible, sold the picture of the corpse to the National Enquirer.
Nasty.
It then became the biggest selling issue of the National Enquirer ever.
Well, even bigger than the ones recently about how the Queen is dying and Prince Philip's having an affair with Zsa Zsa Gabor.
I believe so. Although, actually, they repeated this exact trick with Whitney's corpse a couple of years ago. Yeah, good magazine. Anyway.
Classy-like. So morbid.
As a result of that being in circulation, obviously, people were able to study the photo of Elvis's corpse a little bit more than the Graceland estate had intended.
No. And were they saying, it's not convincing?
Well, they were saying it looks a bit like a dummy, but then so do all embalmed bodies.
Yeah, because also they put loads of makeup on corpses.
And
I bet he looked pretty messed up shortly before he died anyway.
Well, this is the point.
He probably wasn't in his best physical shape.
Exactly. So what people say is, look at his last concert footage and then look at the dummy. The dummy is either, some people say, more glamorous, but of course it would be because he's wearing loads of makeup, or more bloated, which of course it would be. He was obese at that point.
And so, also, corpses can bloat up with gases.
So the thing is, back then, it's not like now where we get pictures of celebrities all the time. The official photographs of Elvis in the years leading up to his death did make him look thinner than he was, because they wouldn't want to show what he actually looked
like. But if you look at this, like the famous Hawaii concert, like he's very energetic, but he's pretty big.
Again, another part of the conspiracy, and you can find the conspiracy wherever you look, is that at that concert, which was in Hawaii, he signed off by saying to the crowd for the first and only time in his entire career, adios. Now, bearing in mind, the crowd aren't Spanish. I think he was just being playful. Yeah. But people have taken that to mean, oh, he was saying goodbye finally. This was his final goodbye because he knew he was going
to
die.
But there's no way to know that, like, he never ever did that before.
Anyway, that conspiracy theory relies on the fact that he faked his own death. Now, the reason that came about as a theory at all was basically because there was a lot of confusion after he died as to exactly what the cause of his death was. And really, the reason there was a lot of confusion was because his people didn't want it to be known that he was a drug addict.
Yeah, so, like Mama Cass as well, myth about her choking on a sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the thing. And nowadays, we find that odd because, e.g. Michael Jackson, you know within hours because it's on the rolling news and everyone can see straight through what the press statements are.
But something about Mama Cass is that she had a heart attack. It wasn't drugs related and she didn't die choking on a sandwich, but they just put that rumour out because they thought everyone was going to say, oh, it's drugs.
Well, actually, the thing with Elvis is he also had a heart attack. And as recently as the 1990s, they did they looked into his autopsy file again. And at the time, that scientist said, actually, looking at the evidence, you would say that, yes, of course, polypharmacy, so being prescribed too many prescription drugs, contributed to his bad health. But actually, at the moment of his death, what he died from was a massive heart attack. It wasn't necessarily drug-induced. So you have to tip the scales one way or the other. Is it drugs or is it the heart attack? But because there was this fudge at the time, and Elvis's people just told the news outlets that he had died of cardiac arrhythmia, there's then conspiracy afterwards that, they didn't mention the drugs at all. And cardiac arrhythmia, as it turns out, is something that scientifically you can actually only suffer from if you're still alive. If you're dead,
Martin's
you can't
got
have
that.
It. Right.
He's right here with us.
Oh, my God, it's like Elvis. So they obviously misappropriated the term to mean heart attack. And then that started this whole conspiracy theory. You've got all the elements combined together then. You've got the fact he said goodbye at his last concert. You've got the fact that he looked better or worse, depending on how you look at it, in his tomb that he did when he was last seen alive. And you've got the fact that, of course, bearing in mind he had a small child as well, his people did not spread the news that he was a massive drug addict. So all of that taken together, he's obviously still alive.
It seems awfully circumstantial to me. Also, is he not buried at Graceland?
Yes, he is, yeah.
Is he buried or cremated?
Buried, yeah.
So if there was really an expectation that Elvis was actually alive. I think they probably would have exhumed the coffin and had a look at just exactly what was inside.
Well, I don't think anyone's ever taken it seriously. Even that Geraldo programme that I was talking about wasn't about, is Elvis still alive? It was about, what did Elvis really die from and why haven't we been told the truth? But it sparked this idea. And then, of course, you know, to a generation of teenagers from the 50s, you can imagine how that would be the most earth-shattering news. You'd want him to still be alive because he meant your childhood and America changing. And of course, it's kind of fun, isn't it? There are all these Elvis impersonators. And in fact, the Elvis impersonators fudged the issue as well, because there have been pictures apparently showing Elvis standing in Graceland. Like, that's where he'd hide out. He's got the whole world. He'd go to one of the world's biggest tourist attractions, which is known as his house. I don't think so. But anyway, there's photos of him at Graceland. But of course, that's easily explained away by the fact that there are thousands of men literally dressed as Elvis Presley walking around Graceland every day.
I also assume that he wouldn't wear his white jumpsuit at Graceland. It's more stage wear, isn't it?
Exactly.
Do we have an equivalent of our generation? We don't have, like, kind of Kurt Cobain stories or Jeff Buckley.
Richie Edwards is the conspiracy theory of our age.
But then the body didn't come back with Richie Edwards. So that's sort of reason.
There's some ambiguity there.
But with Elvis, he would now be 78, and given his lifestyle, I don't think he'd be alive by now anyway.
I don't think he would either. And I think he'd have stepped in at some point, whether it was whether it was Michael Jackson marrying Lisa Marie Presley.
Yeah, or just Priscilla being Priscilla.
Yeah. At some point, you say, yeah, I don't want you to carry on making money out of me, actually.
I mean, that would be the most amazing comeback tour of all time, wouldn't it?
Wow, that would be good, yeah.
Lots of things for our brains to chew on,
yes,
listeners.
But time for us to say adios, which doesn't mean we're going to die.
No, but we will fake our own death.
Bad luck.
But listeners, you can give us more things to chew on with our brains and mouths for next week's show. So please send in all of your questions, and our contact details are on our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com, where you can also find links to buy our holiday album, 1 hour of new, if you haven't heard it yet, material of us talking about the world of holidays. And our other albums as well, Sports Day and Jubilee.
Not a difficult sophomore album amongst them.
remember, if you enjoy listening to Helen and myself chatting, that you can also do that every week on the BBC's Let's Talk About Tech podcast. If you've listened to this and thought, I like the cut of their jib, I'd like to apply that jib to talking about the week on the web, then that's the podcast for you.
Oh, if on the other hand you like my exciting interjections, you could listen to one of my podcasts, Brain Train Podcast, Sound Related Podcast.
Just one long interjection.
Bye! Helen and Laura.